This is the Living Prophets Podcast, and I'm your host, Mark Maxmeister. Episode 50. This is an episode I've been carrying around with me for over a month. And it's difficult for me to talk about, because it's all about my father and the kind of person that he is, both the good and the bad and all the different facets of him. And I bring myself through this because I think right now some of my listeners are probably feeling discouraged by recent events with the Supreme Court approval of Judge Kavanaugh just today. Why do I do this? I can think of plenty of things I'd rather do on a Saturday night, but the reason that I do it is because I think I can help other people, and because the journey that I'm taking myself through is something that is fruitful and helpful and can be the only way that I can see for building bridges. If I don't go on the journey, then I'm not going to be part of any solution. And when I see around me lots of people who are angry and frustrated, I wonder, are we really helping with that anger? I understand that anger can do some good and that people can be justifiably angry at a situation. But anger for me is like a stick of dynamite. You can use it to tunnel through mountains and build bridges, but if you hold on to it, it'll destroy you. I don't want anger to be igniting me and changing my soul into something else. It's not something that you can have every day. And when I look at my father's Twitter feed, I see a very different person than the one that I grew up with, the person that I know. And I don't think that he's unique. I don't think he's a particularly odd case. I think there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people just like him, who can live their lives by one set of precepts, but then they build up this anger and they have to take it out in social media, and they become a completely different person online than the one that they would be in real life. And maybe this is a huge part of what is happening to divide and polarize and separate our country into different factions. Factions that no longer listen to each other, no longer can see each other or hear each other. They only see the reflections of the imaginary enemies that they've created in their own minds about who these other people are. So I'm going to read some of the things that he said in the month of September. And then I'm going to tell you some of the things that I know he's done in his life that are admirable. Because everybody is a mixture of both of these things. The whole testimony was an act. Crying, not knowing how to report a crime, then getting a fake lie detector test of only two questions. Acting so shy. Give me a break. We need proof, not acting, without evidence. Ray. Liar Ford. Only the porn lawyer could do this fake polygraph. Praise the Lord, Brett is going to the Senate vote, and now we need to call our senators. Approve this outstanding, honorable judge, Brett. Shame is a kind word for the scum Schumer, Ray. Get these DNC embarrassing fools out of the gov so we can get some respect back to the USA, Ray. Kerry is a traitor. Cancel the Mueller probe now. Linking to some content from a suspended account. McCain wrote it to screw Trump, a nobody. Dems do not want the justice to follow the Constitution. They just want them to make up laws to follow the liberal agendas. Disgusting. Vote red for the green record making Trump economy. Ray. All over the world, we remember the famous American flag on the moon. I was in Greece and saw it on TV, and people all over the street came up and hugged me and cheered for the USA. Ray. I got kicked off Facebook again today. We need Trump to jail all the political correct libs. Now. Ray. August 28th. Now here are some things I can say about the very same man, my father, who may be full of vitriol and anger on Twitter and post those things in all caps, but It's the very same person who I know volunteers to run the local Knights of Columbus at his church, and he works the concession stand at Panthers games to raise money to support a children's home. He places flags on graves. He commemorates fallen soldiers. When meeting face-to-face, he's never insulted or spoken rudely to a person that I've witnessed, and I've never seen him practice hate speech. This anger seems to be relegated to his keyboard. He's opened his home to people of different political and religious beliefs. He's allowed people sometimes to stay with him that are very different. In the 1960s, he was a Peace Corps volunteer. And as an engineer, he lit up the marketplace in Legazpi, the Philippines. Before that, he spent the summer traveling through India as a volunteer for the YMCA. He's visited over 30 countries before he turned 30. So he's well-traveled and understands the world as it was, at least in the late 60s. And his private emails are effusive with gratitude and love for all the people in his life. Just a smattering of some recent subjects and closings in his emails include, "Great to see you yesterday. Worrying about you. Now our family has a claim to the Plymouth Rock." There's a lot of that. Getting officially into the Mayflower Club, registering with his historical MacFarlane clan in Scotland, joining the Sons of the American Revolution. As my father aged, he became increasingly focused on his legacy as it pertained to his lineage. For me, I've been increasingly focused on how my spirit might sustain and guide me in the future. If I leave a legacy, I hope that it is in the ideas I share through this podcast and conversations and relationships. For me, it's more about how we can make the world better, but I think everyone has a different path in life, and there's nothing inherently wrong with what he's chosen. What I see, though, is that his journey has been about his evolving identity, and that is the lens that I choose to use to understand him. For how else can I square a person who is all of these things at once, who's angry on Twitter, but generous and kind in person? In a speech in 2008, Obama once said something prescient that relates to how identity would come to trump everything else in politics. Of working white class men in Pennsylvania, he said,
"Well, it's not surprising then that they get bitter and they cling to guns or religion or antipathy towards people who aren't like them, or a way to explain their frustrations."
They get bitter. They cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations. Obama wasn't referring to any religious or social or economic issue. These are just facets of how a person grows to define his or her identity. And if we identify with different worlds, our worlds either clash or cease to intersect. There's no bridge, there's no listening, there's nothing, there's just separate universes. This whole podcast has been my attempt to connect and understand and repair that breach in some little way. So since this is a podcast about prophetic words, I'm going to bring in a sermon that looks at the different ways that people have approached every divisive issue in history, from slavery to civil rights to marriage equality. The Reverend Meg Barnhouse of the First Unitarian Universalist Church in Austin explains this pattern is the same.
Those among us who have privilege, you have to speak. You have to choose. You can be respectable. You can be radical. You got to be something. I wonder what kind of things we're saying today that somebody 100 years from now is going to go, "What?" Historians of our movement, the Unitarian and Universalist movement, is named Conrad Wright. And he wrote this. He said there were basically three camps about abolition before the war. There was the William Lloyd Garrison camp, which said slavery has to cease right away. It's a continuing, ongoing horror, and it must stop. And then there were the respectables who go, you know, we're going to work as hard as we can in our politics with our vote, and we're going to make slavery go away gradually. We just don't want to upset the economic or political order. We don't want to throw the South into chaos because, you know, their economy depends on these people being enslaved. And it will be hard on both the formerly enslaved people and all the other free people in the South if there is a big war. And then there were the people who said, we are morally opposed to slavery for sure. We are morally opposed to it, but we just don't like politics in our churches. And then there were those, including the Unitarian minister, Theodore Parker, who was part of the Underground Railroad. He was still a horrendously racist, but his actions were to help the escaping people. He and five other guys, they call themselves the Secret Six. Slavery was not going to end without violence, and there needed to be an uprising, and they needed to arm enslaved men in order to facilitate an uprising. And they met with John Brown, who was an abolitionist. They call him a fiery abolitionist, which he was, but he was also a murderous abolitionist. He'd killed families in Kansas, in Kansas, who were pro-slavery families. They gave him money to fund the raid on Harper's Ferry, where he was going to capture weapons to distribute to the enslaved men so they could have a good uprising. And the Secret Six, they weren't completely sure that they were on board with the bloodshed and violence that was going to ensue, but they funded him anyway. And he was captured. It was not a successful raid. And the New York Times broke the story. Three of them instantly went to Canada because the police were coming. One of them checked himself into a mental institution. One of them stuck around and kept trying to get John Brown out of jail. Theodore Parker, he had tuberculosis and he was trying to kind of bake it out of his lungs in Italy. So he did not get arrested because he just died of tuberculosis in Italy. So you can see that there were people who thought they were doing right, and they were doing their best. I think not the pro-slavery people. I cannot even say that there were fine people among those people. No. But there were people who were against slavery morally in various points of willingness to be disruptive and to fight and to do violence or to make political efforts. And I want to say it's always been this way. It's always been this way. We have people now on the, in the 90s and early 2000s, it was the marriage equality. A lot of people were like, no, we need it now. We're going to have it now. And the middle of the road respectables were like, oh my gosh, don't do that. You're going to make everybody so mad. There's going to be backlash. People did this to Martin Luther King too. No, don't make people mad. Backlash. He was like, psh, I'm not making them mad. They're already mad. I'm just showing you that they're mad. And then there were the people who were like, yes, I'm for marriage equality, but I just don't want to talk politics in church. So now it's immigration issues and Black Lives Matter, and there are people still in all these camps among us. I don't know how to name them or how to. I've been calling them radicals, respectables, and don't do politics in church people, but we have all of those people among us. And here's what I want to say. I want to say we need the radicals. We need those people who are like, this has to stop right now. We're going to disrupt till we get it done. And we need the respectables. Because in every social movement, usually there's a choice of who the powers that be are going to deal with. Right? They're going to deal with Martin Luther King, who is radical, but not really scary. And then there's Malcolm X, who's radical and pretty scary. And so it's like, okay, Which one do you want to deal with? Two, for the vote for women, suffrage. There was a respectable woman. And then there were the scary women who chained themselves to Woodrow Wilson's gate and were arrested and force-fed and tortured in prison. The politicians were like, do you want to deal with this nice, respectable lady with the hat and the hat pin? Or do you want to deal with this wild banshee who's screaming and chaining herself to the president's fence? So every movement has to have the radicals and the respectables. And really the ones we don't need in the movement are like, I'm not really interested in politics. I don't really care. I mean, I'm for justice. I mean, like, who's against justice? But we have to know when we are silent on these matters, especially those among us who claim the privilege of white skin, and those of us who claim the privilege of citizenship, and those of us who claim the privilege of heterosexuality and the privilege of economic stability. I could go on. Those among us who have privilege of some kind or another, when we are silent, that is a way of committing violence. You have to speak. You have to choose. You can be respectable. You can be radical. You got to be something. But we need each other. How do we talk to each other? We talk to each other with curiosity and respect. If another person is in a position that you don't understand, just say, help me understand. I don't understand where you're coming from. Help me. Why? Now, what is so good about the order here that you don't want to disrupt it? Or what is so bad about the order here that you want to disrupt it? We have to figure out how to be all together in this movement, working for justice in our different ways, and not despise each other, not scorn each other, not shame each other.
So as Meg said in her sermon, there are three camps that you can put people in and how they react to upheaval and social issues and divisive change that can come to society. And I used to think that I was someone who vacillated between the radical and the rational or the reasonable. But there's another way you could put those two camps together that I think is more useful when we think about ourselves as spiritual beings. If you think about the world and you want to go change it, you can imagine that the way that you're going to bring about change is to just replace the bad people with better people. Or, and I believe that I put myself in this camp more, you can look at the people that are around, those in power, those in the margins, those everywhere in between, and decide that you, through your example and your words and your sacrifices, you can change and transform the people who are around you to be better than they are. So if you are after replacing people, you are a radical. And if you're into transforming them and allowing your life to be consumed by this effort to transform, then you're being one of the more reasonable or rational or reliably bridge-building people. It brings up a Mennonite preacher when I was in college that used to say, don't let the world press you into its mold. Don't let the world decide the margins, the boundaries of who you will be. Don't let the world set your identity. You have to decide on your own what kind of person you want to become, and you need to push that into the world. And I think in very much this way, you could be radical and you could be transformative, but for me, I'm much more of the transformative kind, or at least I aspire to be, because I think, and I feel very deeply, that that's the kind of change that doesn't beget another cycle of violence, another cycle of hate. Based on my age, I'm someone who grew up and was born into a society that had already made transformational change through Martin Luther King and some radical change in forcefully ousting certain people in power but not changing their hearts, just replacing them. And I think we're living with the consequences of too much radical change and not enough transformational change. And for the next generation, I think about my son, I want to be involved in transforming hearts and minds, not replacing bad people with better people. And when I look at the political situation, I don't see a lot of other people out there that align with me in that sense. Maybe there's, out of 100 people that are out there trying to change things, there's one that's out there truly thinking about transforming the people that they disagree with. And I don't mean evangelizing. I don't mean arguing your points. I don't think rational discourse has ever actually changed someone. If you watched hours of debate about the Judge Kavanaugh thing, people were speaking past each other and just using their stump talking points, and no one was listening anymore. Transformation has to begin by thinking about the hearts and the minds and the identity of the people and giving them an opportunity to grow into a different identity. That is what transformation is about. You could identify with a different kind of world because you've already suffered enough under the world that exists, and you won't want that anymore for yourself or for others. So thank you. I hope that this podcast has done some good. And you're always welcome to let your friends know about it on Facebook or like us on iTunes or write back to me on Twitter. I'm sure you can find me. Until next time.